Good morning. It is the Osmo NBA Strategy Show for the Thursday night games, and a little bit bigger of a slate on Thursday than we usually have. NBA competing with NFL. A lot of times on Thursday, we see 3-4 game slates, but actually 6 games to talk about and a lot of injuries. Today's show is sponsored by Prize Picks, and Adam and I are going to walk you through all these injuries and some of the situations to go through. Kind of feels like we're in full swing of NBA season, Adam, because we're starting to see fully loaded injury reports.
Yeah, tons of injury reports, tons of late news these days. It seems like we kind of got a break early in the season, but the one thing that has been good is, knock on wood, the injury reporting has still been, for the most part, like early in the day. We haven't had a whole lot of just like, you know, finding out 10 minutes before a game that somebody's not going to play. So hopefully that keeps up, but should be a fun night. 6 basketball games, 11 hockey games plus football. So if you play multiple DFS sports, you should not have a shortage of things to pay attention to.
Yeah, as Adam does, Adam playing pretty much every DFS sport out there. Also, something that we have, if you guys are interested in college basketball DFS, we do have a promo going on right now. If you use the promo code COACHK, you get the first week of our NBA college DFS projections. Only $5 for your first week. That is the promo code COACHK, as in Coach K, coach of the Duke Blue Devils. Matt Kajewski does a really good job with our college basketball stuff. And Adam and I have talked about this before. Adam's had a bunch of success playing college football, and I haven't on DraftKings in the past as well. And I don't know anything about it. It's all because of the projections that Matt puts up. He does a really good job with it. So something that you guys should definitely check out using that promo code COACHK. Now I'm just going to run through the key injuries for today's slate. The guys who are listed as questionable, and then we'll jump into talking about the games. Steph Curry, questionable. Bam Adebayo, questionable. OG Anunoby, questionable. Jared Allen, questionable. Lauri Markkanen, questionable. Terrence Mann, questionable. Those are really the important ones. And then that's in addition to some players that have already been ruled out and guys like Nick Batum who are doubtful. So those are things that we're going to be looking to be paying attention to today. And right away, we could start by talking about this Miami Heat situation. They are at home against Adams Washington Wizards. And Miami has been very good this year, but we're starting to see a lot of guys shuffle in and out of the lineup. Yesterday seemed to be more for rest than anything else. Kyle Lowry, he's expected to play after sitting yesterday. Bam Adebayo, he is going to be questionable. If he's out, it is going to be another Dwayne Dedman night. So let's walk through a couple of situations here. First, if Bam Adebayo is out, how comfortable do you feel going back to Dwayne Dedman after what happened yesterday?
Still pretty comfortable going back to him. He's still only $4,100. He played 25 minutes, so the playing time was still there. You know, he could have played more, but 25 minutes is still fine at 4,100. He's, for his career, he's got a pretty long track record of being a solid fantasy producer. So I don't want to read too much into, you know, what's happening in any one game recently. He's not a bad NBA player, and the minutes have been there. So like when you look at his starts this year, the first one, I think he played something like 18 minutes, but he was in foul trouble. Then he played like 28 minutes. Then he played 25. So the playing time has been good. The production, you know, has been hit or miss, but overall this season, still 0.94 DraftKings points per minute. So it's not like you've seen some massive drop off in Dwayne Dedman's production. I'm just kind of treating that as a bad game.
Yeah, and there was not necessarily foul difficulty that made him come off the court, but it could have been something. He had 4 personal fouls, maybe that limited his aggressiveness a little bit. He only had a 7.3% usage rate, which is crazy low, but I mean, all things considered, if you played him in cash games on DK, he was 4,000. He scored 16.5 fantasy points. On FanDuel yesterday, he was 3,700. It's not like he was the worst cash game play in the world, even if he did fall a little bit short of expectations. So same deal. If Bam Adebayo's out, Dwayne Dedman's starting, I'll have to see where his ownership ends up in GPPs for cash games, though. He would once again be a no-brainer play for me. And then let's talk about the Jimmy Butler situation. Jimmy Butler was really good yesterday. A lot of that had to do with the absence of both Kyle Lowry and Bam Adebayo. So Kyle Lowry expected back today. Bam Adebayo still up in the air. But how is this going to impact how you view Jimmy Butler relative to how you might have viewed him yesterday?
Yeah, so I think that Lowry being back, I don't expect that to do a whole lot to Jimmy Butler's usage. I think it does affect his assist numbers. If you looked at his numbers last year without Bam Adebayo and compared them to his numbers going into yesterday without Bam this year, the biggest difference was that his assist percentage was way down. And I think that can be credited to Kyle Lowry. So I still think that it's a situation where Butler looks very good. He's going to rebound. He's going to get some assists and he's going to be a really high usage guy. But I do expect him to produce at a little bit lower rate this year without Bam and with Lowry than he did last year. But he would still look really good. If Bam is in, then Butler, I think it just to me becomes more of, you know, he's still really good. He's still capable of having a big game. But also pretty much correctly priced and not a spot that I'm really going out of my way to get to against a Washington team that's been very good defensively this year.
Yeah, and then on the other side, if Bam Adebayo does end up playing, he's 8,400, I believe, on both FanDuel and DraftKings today, which to me is a not difficult price point to get to at all in terms of ownership right now. We have him projected for 15% ownership on DK. On FanDuel, he is projected for 27% ownership. Something else on FanDuel, he has center and power forward eligibility, makes him a little bit easier to fit into lineups. So just kind of a rough build I did in the morning, assuming Bam Adebayo plays. I was actually getting to him at a pretty good clip. I think your point is noted that the Washington Wizards, not nearly as favorable of a matchup this year as they were last year. Defense is better. There's no Russell Westbrook, so the pace is slower. But that aside, Bam Adebayo would actually be my favorite guy to get to on the Heat if he ends up being in. Is that something you feel similarly about?
Yeah, I think if Bam is in, it creates a situation where, you know, Butler, like we were saying, Butler a little bit overpriced or at least correctly priced. Hero's price tag is up from the games that Butler missed. Lowry has been a low usage guy this year. Bam's kind of the one that's just like not affected by anything. You know, he's better, obviously, if guys are missing, but he still has about a 26 to 27% usage rate this year. He's rebounding at a high level. His assist numbers are down from last year. Again, I attribute that to Kyle Lowry, but 1.21 DraftKings points per minute overall this season. And he's very affordably priced at 8,400. So if he's in and not on, you know, any known playing time restriction, I think he looks very good.
And then on the other side of the game, we talk about the Washington Wizards. So a couple of things here that are at play that I think we have to weigh. First of all, whether Bam Adebayo plays or not is going to have a little bit of an impact on how good the Miami Heat's defense is. Also for the Wizards today, we've got Spencer Dinwiddie. He's resting with this being the tail end of a back-to-back. He missed the majority of last year with a torn ACL, and we've seen Washington be pretty cautious with him in games on consecutive days. So with Spencer Dinwiddie out, a couple of things. Number one, how does it impact Bradley Beal for you? And then who do you think is the best value play in place of Dinwiddie?
So Beal, I think, becomes a better option. You know, I think it increases his projection. There's more usage to go around. There's more ball handling responsibilities. Whoever replaces Dinwiddie, it's most likely going to be Aaron Holiday. If not, it would be Howell Neto. But neither of those are as high usage guys as Dinwiddie is. So Beal should look better. So far this year, he's played 207 minutes without Dinwiddie on the floor, 34.1% usage rate, also a 31.7% assist percentage, 1.24 DraftKings points per minute. So it makes Beal look better. His price tags actually also came down a little bit from yesterday. So difficult matchup at Miami, but just, you know, a more appealing play than he normally is when Dinwiddie is in. And then at the guard spot, you know, filling in for Dinwiddie, I expect it to be Holiday. We saw him fill in for Bradley Beal in the couple of games that Beal recently missed because of the death of his grandmother. And Holiday played, I think, 36 minutes and then, or 34 minutes and then 26 minutes. You had Howell Neto play 16 and then 23. I find this to be a really interesting situation because Holiday's 3,800 on DraftKings, Neto's 3,200. Neto's the better per minute fantasy producer, but if Holiday starts, his minutes are safer. I think in tournaments, it's going to be a really interesting spot to pay attention to ownership because if Holiday starts, you know, going under the assumption that he starts, he's going to project as a decent point per dollar value, but there's still going to be a lot of volatility there where if Howell Neto is playing well off the bench, which he is certainly capable of doing, that he closes this game over Holiday. And if you get a situation where Neto plays 22 minutes and Holiday plays 26, Neto's very frequently going to be the better fantasy option of the two and almost likely be lower owned if he's coming off the bench. So I think that's a spot to pay attention to. And then also, I think it's a little bit different. It doesn't make a huge difference because it's not like Dinwiddie's a low usage guy without Beal, but I would expect Holiday starting alongside Beal to be a little bit less productive than Holiday starting alongside Dinwiddie.
Yep, I think that makes sense. And by the way, we've seen one other back-to-back situation this year where the Wizards rested Spencer Dinwiddie. Here's how they allocated the minutes in that game. And it's only one game, so is it going to be the same? Who knows? But I think it goes back to your point before about Neto versus Holiday. The last time Spencer Dinwiddie rested for a back-to-back, Aaron Holiday played 24 minutes as a starter. Howell Neto played the backup point guard, Metzen played 24 minutes. They didn't play any minutes together. They just split those minutes right down the middle. Does that mean it's going to be the same today? No, but I think they're going to give Aaron Holiday the first crack, assuming he's going to be the starter. And then if Neto plays really well off the bench, I think he could be the guy who closes the game, and it wouldn't be shocking if we see Neto play 28 minutes and Holiday play 20, or maybe Holiday gets off to a good start. He plays 28, Neto plays 20. I think there's a lot of flexibility with what these minutes are going to look like. And so like you, we look at somebody like Neto, who's 3,200 on DK, and Aaron Holiday's 3,800. Holiday's probably going to be more popular. So I think Neto is a really good pivot play. Let me see what we currently have for ownership. Right now we have Neto projected for actually 18% ownership on FanDuel. On DraftKings, well, Neto's actually projected for 23% ownership, and Holiday is projected for 2% ownership. All right.
Okay, well, that's going to change if Holiday starts. So
Sure. Anyway, that, and he did start last time, but so it would be the inverse. If Neto ends up being more popular, then I'd prefer Holiday, but at least as of right now, and these are also the only the initial runs of ownership that just came in before we started the show. I expect that to flip where Holiday is more popular than Neto, but that is where it stands now. Anything else that stand out to you from the Washington side of this game?
Not really. Daniel Gafford had a massive game last night, still only played 24 minutes though. So I think it's just kind of more of the same with the Gafford Harrell split. Either one of them is certainly capable of going out and putting up a massive game. The pricing is reasonable on both. Gafford's still 4,500 on DraftKings, Harrell 6,200, but it's really difficult to get like more than 24 minutes from Gafford. We've seen 24 minutes in a couple of games recently, but you know, not really going more than that. And then Harrell, you know, playing anywhere from 24 to 28, kind of depending on how the game goes. So neither one stands out as a priority, but you know, a 6-game slate, both of those guys produce well on a per minute basis. So they're relatively high ceiling guys that you can mix in as contrarian pieces.
All right, next game we have here to look at, it is the Cleveland Cavaliers at home against the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors have been absolute world beaters this year, and start of the year, they're playing an easy schedule. So a lot of people are saying like, hey, they're beating the crap out of these bad teams, but what are they going to look like against good teams? Well, they go and they blow out the Nets last time out on the road. So it looks like the Warriors, they're going to be a force this year. They're playing a very beat up Cleveland team, and it's kind of hard to know who we're going to like for Cleveland. I think this is one of those situations where we're kind of limited in the amount of things Adam and I could say about the Cavaliers right now. So like this video, subscribe to the YouTube channel. We've got the NBA Deeper Dive, Live Before Lock coming up later. But Jared Allen, questionable. Lauri Markkanen, questionable. We know that Evan Mobley's out. Colin Sexton remains out. Lamar Stevens, also questionable. If there's a bunch of guys out, he's somebody who could potentially pick up minutes. But what are your takes, if any, on this Cleveland front court with Markkanen and Allen both questionable?
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much that you can say at this point. Like you were saying, you know, if Allen and Markkanen are both out, then you're going to get a similar look to yesterday, assuming Kevin Love plays on the back-to-back. If he doesn't, then it really becomes a mess. But if they're both out, then you know, you're getting a lot of Dean Wade again for whatever that's worth. You would probably get around 20 minutes from Love if he plays. But if Allen is in, I think he looks really good because we had seen his playing time really ramp up without Markkanen and Love. Now you maybe have Markkanen, you maybe have Love, you don't have Mobley. So there would still be a lot of minutes there for Jared Allen if he's able to play. He's athletic enough, I assume he'd be able to stay on the floor here against, you know, a smaller Golden State team. I don't think that would be much of a concern. And he, you know, produces at a high level. So, and he wasn't injured. He has a non-COVID illness. So I assume that conditioning wise and all that, he's fine. So I think he would look pretty good at 7,500, but it's just really difficult to, you know, speculate on it now because there's legitimately like three or four different pieces that may or may not be in the front court.
Yeah, and as long as we're just adding other pieces into the mix, Kevin Love isn't listed on the injury report, but this is the tail end of a back-to-back, right? And Kevin Love generally sits in a lot of these situations, so I would not be surprised at all to see Kevin Love sit, particularly if we have Markkanen and Jared Allen able to play. The last time they played a back-to-back, he played 16 minutes in the front end, 19 minutes on the back end. Still limited minutes, though, so even if Kevin Love is in, which I think there's a decent chance he rests, I don't think he's going to play very significant minutes, so there is a lot of playing time to open up there, but let's just look through a scenario. If Jared Allen and Lauri Markkanen were both out, are there any value plays that you'd be looking to get to from Cleveland? We've seen Chetty Osmond been priced way up. He's now 6,100 on DK, basically takes him out of consideration. But any of these other cheap guys, whether it be Dean Wade, Isaac Okoro, that would stand out?
Yeah, I think they would both look reasonable. One of the big takeaways from the rotation last night was that Ed Davis played 24 minutes. I don't necessarily think he's playing 20 plus minutes against Golden State, but the point being that they used him in the rotation. So he like knowing or expecting him to be in the rotation makes it so that like there's less minutes for Chetty if he comes off the bench, for example. $4,900 Okoro is a pretty healthy price tag as well. I think that's difficult to get to. Wade's up to $4,200. He's not a very good fantasy producer. He did play huge minutes last night. He would benefit from a rebounding standpoint if Markkanen and Allen are out again, and if Love's out, then you know, even better. But he did play almost 38 minutes last night. If they go small here for a large portion of this game, as you know, they certainly could, Wade would be getting those minutes at center, which is appealing. So I'm not excited about a $4,200 Wade, but I think I would get to him before I got to a $4,900 Okoro or a $6,100 Chetty.
Yeah, and then the other players in the rotation that have produced well and have been fairly popular lately, Darius Garland and Ricky Rubio, I just kind of think they're priced appropriately at this point. Both of them have become more expensive on FanDuel and DraftKings. Tail end of a back-to-back fatigue could be an issue. Also, a brutal matchup against the Golden State Warriors. To me, these are just low-priority plays, especially on the slate where I assume we're going to end up with a whole bunch of value to get to. So Ricky Rubio, Darius Garland, if you have exposure to them, I wouldn't say you have to take them out of your lineups, but far from core plays.
Yeah. Rubio, I'd get to Rubio before Garland. We've seen in the time that they've spent playing alongside each other this year, Rubio's really kind of been the alpha out of that group. Garland's usage goes down, his assist percentage goes down. Rubio just does everything while he's out there. So between the two, I prefer Rubio. The minutes, you know, he played 33 minutes last night. I think that's more in line with what we should expect of him as a starter, like 33, 34 minutes. I think the 37 minutes he played against the Celtics two games ago was a little bit of a fluke. But if you're going to get around 33, 34 minutes from him and then say, you know, 36, 37 from Garland, they're both going to look like solid options. But I prefer Rubio just because he produces better when they're on the floor together.
All right, now over to the Warriors side of the game. I've talked about the most important injury of the slate, and that is Steph Curry is listed as questionable to play. Dealing with a hip injury, that is the issue, and I'm not really sure if he's going to play or not. I think a lot of people just assume Steph Curry is going to end up playing through this injury, but you know, it's early in the season. Steph Curry's had a somewhat long injury history in his career, and he's played in every game so far this year. Seems like a reasonable time to potentially give him a day off against a beat-up Cleveland Cavaliers team. So let's walk through a scenario where there is no Steph Curry tonight. I think we'd be looking at Jordan Poole for a whole bunch of minutes in the mid-range as somebody to get to. Andrew Wiggins would be extra usage for him as a value option. I would really like getting to Gary Payton II, the Mitten. He's seen a little bit of an uptick in playing time over the last couple of weeks. He's been playing like 16 to 20 minutes per night. And so far for the season, he's been a pretty good fantasy producer when he's been on the court. So his numbers overall, he's playing 17.4 minutes per game. Oh, no, that's where's his numbers for? Okay, here it is. So he's averaging about a fantasy point per minute, which if we're going to say Gary Payton cheap, potentially in the starting lineup playing in the neighborhood of 30 minutes, he'd be the number one value play for me to get to if there's no Steph Curry tonight. How are you viewing this Warriors situation?
Yeah, I agree with you. And also Andre Iguodala's out, so there's already more bench minutes available. Although, you know, Steve Kerr probably just throws someone else from the end of the bench into the rotation. He loves playing these deep rotations. But I'm with you. Gary Payton's played really well this year to the point where he went from not really being in the rotation to Kerr saying, okay, this guy needs to be in the rotation. And then now he's playing, you know, as many minutes as anyone off the bench except for Iggy. And now Iguodala's out. So either way, I actually think Payton is a viable value option. But if Curry's in, it's more of like a dart throw, you know, hope for the best. If Curry's out, he looks great because he would be the most logical guy, I think, to slide into some more minutes. He's been productive this year as well. Jordan Poole, 32.5% usage rate without Curry on the floor this year. He would look really, really good. Andrew Wiggins has a 27.7% usage rate without Curry on the floor. So he would look better than he normally does. Draymond, I think, pretty much would stay the same. If anything, he probably gets worse because his assist, it's different when you're passing to an open Jordan Poole or an open Andrew Wiggins than when you're passing to an open Steph Curry. So I wouldn't be bumping Draymond, but I would view it as a boost for Jordan Poole, for Andrew Wiggins, for Gary Payton.
And then if he's in, I'm not going to have all that much interest in Steph Curry. This is the highest price I could really remember him having on FanDuel and DraftKings. He's 11.8 on DK, 11,100 on FanDuel. The most expensive Steph Curry was all of last season was 10,800. And obviously there's upside for Steph Curry always, but this is a price tag a little bit too steep in my opinion. Am I crazy for thinking that?
No, not at all. The only counter I would have is that I think Curry's one of the most difficult guys to price in DFS because his average production is good, but it's not quite as good as the other elite players. You know, like he doesn't rebound at the same level as Giannis. So he's not going to consistently, you know, put up those same kind of games. He's not the same fantasy producer as somebody like Jokic, but his ceiling is just as high as anybody. You know, Curry can just go out. He's already eclipsed 80 fantasy points in a game this year. So he's someone where it's always like, if he's priced correctly for his median, then he's always like a really, really good and really popular play because he's so capable of just destroying his median projection. If he's priced more for his ceiling, like he is tonight, then he's not going to be a priority, but we also haven't projected for 1% ownership right now on a 6-game slate. So there's certainly the argument to just say, yes, I realize he's overpriced for what he's likely to do, but he's going to just like his good games just blow any possible salary out of the water, basically. So as long as the ownership is low, I would be interested. As long as the ownership is low and as long as I don't have to sacrifice too much to get there, I'd be interested. But I wouldn't want, you know, if his ownership gets up to 10, 15% or something at this price tag, I would gladly just not have him.
Yeah, and that's fair. That ownership, 1%, I wouldn't have an issue yet. I tend to think he's not actually going to be 1% owned. And one thing we've seen, less so on FanDuel, but certainly on DraftKings, all of the studs are really priced up now. And I'm not exactly sure what's changed in the pricing algorithm, but if you go through just all of the guys on DK at the high end of the price range, we have Steph Curry, just read off his price, where he is now 11,800. Jokic, 12,000. Karl-Anthony Towns, 10,500. Paul George, 11,000. Ja Morant, 10,000. I'm finding it a little, and also DeJounte Murray, another one to point out there, at 9,800. I'm finding it a little hard to make lineups and pay up for all these guys. Now, like we said, there's so many players that are listed as questionable on the injury report. Maybe that changes later in the day when we get all these guys rolled out. And all of a sudden it's like, hey, where are we going to spend our salary when we have all these guys who are 3,000 or 3,500 on FanDuel to roster? But at least as of now, I'm finding it hard to pay up for studs. So a little bit more balanced lineups than I've typically made. I'm not sure if you've made any lineups yet, Adam, but just kind of eyeballing the pricing, do you think this could be a slate where we build more lineups in the mid-range?
Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't made any yet, but in general this season, at least on DraftKings, I've been going more balanced than normal. And I think that it's sort of been a situation where people are going stars and scrubs more than I think that they should. I think that, you know, over the years, it was always kind of just like drilled in everybody's head that you build stars and scrubs, that gives you a higher ceiling, but it was never really articulated that the reason that was the case is because mid-range pricing was typically pretty efficient. And the top end guys were typically like $1,000 less than they should be because they'd be like 11K sort of as, or 11.5 as like a ceiling for like the best players. So it created a situation where value, you know, the cheap value that opens up is naturally underpriced because of injuries. And then the guys at the top are underpriced because that's just how the pricing algorithm was working. Now, when you have all these guys priced up, I think you could still argue that Jokic is underpriced to 12K. But other than that, you know, Curry from a median standpoint is at best correctly priced. Same for Towns, same for George. So it's creating a situation where I think people are still just like out of habit building these lineups where they're taking the cheap guys who don't really have really high ceilings. You're just hoping they get like 28 fantasy points. And then they're forcing in these expensive guys when you can just play a bunch of mid-range guys that all are capable of going for 50 plus fantasy points themselves. So I've kind of been building that way more often this year anyway, and it's gone pretty well. But this is another slate where Jokic accepted because he is his own entity at this point. I'm not going to be like prioritizing jamming in $3,500 mediocre plays just to pay 12K for Steph Curry.
Yeah, no, I'm on the same page as you. And I think the people have to look at the pricing algorithm. It's just different this year, especially on DraftKings. This is not how guys were priced last year. And for now, we just have to adjust. But the thing is, it's not like you have to hand build lineups or anything and make specific adjustments for, like, I'm still plugging my projections in a fantasy cruncher. And that's just what comes out. You know, I'm building my lineups yesterday and it's getting to me a lot of Jalen Brunson, a lot of Kristaps Porzingis, which obviously it was the same for a lot of the field, but that's where a lot of the value or best points per dollar plays have been this year, and not necessarily on the high range as it's been in the past. And that'll transition us to the next game. Guys who are in the same kind of situation that we talked about before with Steph Curry, Ja Morant, Memphis at home against the Clippers. Morant is 10,000. This is the salary point range that was kind of reserved for Steph Curry type stars in the past, guys who had really high upsides, but weren't necessarily, like you said, the same fantasy producer as, say, like a Nikola Jokic or a Giannis Antetokounmpo. Now I've got 10,000 for Morant. He's been really good this year. He's arguably going to win most improved player, or is the front runner win most improved player. I just don't want to pay this much for Ja Morant. He's very expensive on both FanDuel and DraftKings. And I think we're close to his ceiling price.
Yeah, I think so too. And then you also have the return of Dylan Brooks, which is just not going to mean good things most likely for Morant. His usage rate in the three games he's played with Brooks is 28.1%, which that's good, But this season, he has a 32.7% usage rate overall. He's priced at this point to have a 33% usage rate. And Dylan Brooks is just going to chuck shots. There's no like hoping that Dylan Brooks, you know, maybe he just shot a lot out of the gate and he'll calm down. Like, Dylan Brooks is going to take usage away from John Morant. There's no real way around that. So it makes it so I was actually playing Morant at this price tag pretty happily before Brooks came back. But now the combination of a difficult price to get to and the fact that I expect his usage rate to come down a bit with Brooks out there makes it pretty tough to get to him.
Dylan Brooks sucks. Like, this is one of my least favorite players to watch in the NBA because he's a good defender, but he plays so outside of what his capabilities are. So, you know, Dylan Brooks comes back from the injury list, and the Grizzlies were playing so well early in the year. They've got guys like Desmond Bane on the court, who's a good defender, just doesn't take up usage on the court. In theory, Dylan Brooks should be an upgrade over Desmond Bane. But the issue is you plug Dylan Brooks in, he's like, all right, Dylan Brooks time. And his usage rate in three games this year, 27.3%, 34%, 32.4%. If Dylan Brooks is going to lead Memphis in usage, they're just not going to win very many games. It's going to be an issue for their offense. So he needs to tone it down a little bit, but I'm not sure he's going to. So like what you said, he really hurts Ja Morant for me. And then kind of other guys on the roster, there's a little bit of upside always in Jaren Jackson Jr. if he could avoid foul trouble, but nobody else that I really want to get to, because it does seem like Dylan Brooks kind of just cannibalized the value of everybody.
Yeah, he takes usage away from Bane. He takes usage away from Morant. He takes some usage away from Jackson. It doesn't matter for Adams because he's not a high usage guy anyway. But Brooks being back is just a problem from a fantasy standpoint for basically everybody else that has to this point been priced for him to be out. So I think that 4,600 for Adams is okay. But the issue is that the Clippers are pretty likely to go small, and that could get Adams off the court. That does make me interested in Jaren Jackson Jr. in tournaments. We've talked about it a lot, but he's most productive when he's playing without Steven Adams. If this game does close small, there's a good chance you're getting Jackson at center. Those are productive minutes for him. So not a priority, but not projected for a ton of ownership right now either. He does have a pretty high ceiling at 6,300.
Yeah, and then just to address some of the comments in the YouTube chat, this is not to say that Brooks individually is bad. He is very poor decision-making that really hurts the Memphis Grizzlies. And ultimately, if he could play within himself, I think he would be a very valuable piece for them. And I think that on defense, he certainly is valuable. But if he's going to go out and take up more usage in the offense than John Morant does, it's an issue for Memphis that they have to figure out a way to tone him down a little bit, because the leader of their offense should be John Morant. It shouldn't be Dylan Brooks, and that has not been the case the last couple of games. And
yeah, exactly. This isn't about Brooks as like a basketball player. It's not a hot take to say he's a worse offensive player than John Morant.
Yeah, exactly. And
taking less possessions than John Morant.
And Dylan Brooks disagrees. Dylan Brooks, like, I'm taking all of the shots because I'm Dylan Brooks. So that's really what I think the issue is with him on court on offense. And at least for fantasy purposes, we're going to see it ultimately likely cut into the production of all these guys unless he changes his game a little bit. On the other side of the game with the Clippers, Terrence Mann is listed as questionable to play. We also have news here where Nicholas Batum is doubtful to play. So I know earlier in the show you talked about how the injury reporting has been better so far this year, Adam. But one thing that we kind of missed out on, the Clippers game starts the other day. The reporters go, hey, Nicholas Batum, he's dealing with a sore Achilles tendon. They're going to limit his minutes today. It's like, well, I didn't know that until the game started. So now as a result, Nicholas Batum, he only played a handful of minutes last game. He's doubtful today. Terrence Mann questionable. In a situation where Terrence Mann doesn't play, who's going to stand out to you as good value from the Clippers?
If he doesn't play, I think you're looking at a lot of Luke Kennard. Last game, Kennard came off the bench, but he closed. He played 30.7 minutes. Like you said, Batum was limited in that game, only played 14 minutes. You got a bunch of Amir Coffey. Brandon Boston was in the rotation. So I think Kennard's the biggest winner. I don't know if he'd slide into the starting lineup. I guess he would, but they could just throw in like Coffey. But I think Kennard would be the guy that I trusted the most to get more minutes. Coffey probably plays mid-20s again, but based on the fact that Kennard's been in the rotation all year, he'd be the guy that I feel the best about getting, 30 or so minutes.
Yeah, last game. So we saw Nick Batum. He started last game. He played 14 minutes and he's going to be out today. And that was also a game that Terrence Mann was out. Here is how the minutes shook up for some of those cheaper guys. Brandon Boston stepped in and played 20 minutes. Amir Coffey played 25. Luke Kennard played 31. Then you consider that we've got those 14 minutes from Nick Batum to allocate elsewhere. And I think Amir Coffey would be in play. He's somebody I wouldn't have an issue with getting to some exposure to, assuming he'd be low owned at really cheap price on FanDuel and DraftKings. But yeah, Luke Kennard would be the guy to get to, because we'd be looking at probably like 32 to 34 minutes from Luke Kennard at price tag in the mid 4K range. So Luke Kennard would be the guy to get to. On the high end with Paul George, it's the same sort of situation I talk about with Morant. Is there upside in Paul George? Sure. I just don't know that I want to pay $11,000 for him on DraftKings or over on FanDuel. Paul George is priced at $10,100. $10,100 more reasonable. I could see myself getting to that salary, but $11,000 on DK, I just don't think I want to pay that much for Paul George.
Yeah, that's where I'm at as well. I think he's a really good, I think he's a good play. He's a good player, obviously, 1.4 DraftKings points per minute, playing huge minutes, but he's 11K. And so it's not even about the 11K price tag. It really just comes down to what else can you get in your lineup? And assuming we don't get, you know, crazy value opening up somewhere where you're getting like good point per minute guys jumping into, you know, a lot of usage, like I don't want to just be jamming in more Dean Wade so that I can afford Paul George. I would rather just, you know, be going with like 2-7K guys in that situation. So certainly happy to get to George, but he's expensive. And also where I am paying up, Jokic is just very clearly my priority.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. If I'm paying up for somebody right now, Jokic would be the number one guy. We do have a super chat here from Jake Statler. He's asking, is there content on Awesomo for sorting crunches? I've been sorting via GridView and Fantasy Cruncher. Want to know if there's a more efficient way. Not that I'm aware of. Is there a specific... So there's different search functions on Fantasy Cruncher that I use. If you go to the left-hand side where there's the player page, you could click on the magnifying glass and it'll show you individual lineups with individual players. So I'll use that to kind of check to see what my combinations are of certain players. There's also the stacks tab that you could use to sort to see what percentage of each team you're using. I'm not exactly sure how to answer your question. Jake, DM me on Twitter if you follow me. I think that could be the best way to go about answering this question. Probably going to be hard to do on a show. Do you have a better answer for him, Adam?
No, I don't. I didn't totally understand kind of like what he was looking for, but I would have said the same thing that you did. Like if you're trying to like look at lineups that have, you know, a specific player using the toolbar or whatever you want to call it, where the players' names are on the left using the search function there. But yeah, I'm not entirely sure like what he's asking.
Yeah. So DM me on Twitter and I'll help you out and we could go through some Fantasy Cruncher stuff. Just show me, or maybe take if you take like a video on your phone of what you're trying to do on Fantasy Cruncher and explain it to me, maybe then I'll have a better understanding. But either way, DM me on Twitter and I'll help you out. All right. Actually, before we get to the next game, do a quick ad read here. Today's show is sponsored by Prize Picks. If you guys are new to Prize Picks, this is a different way to play daily fantasy sports prop based contest. You build player prop cards and you can play player props of basically any kind of DFS sport parlayed together, which is something I always find entertaining when I look over at Prize Picks. There's always these kind of off the normal trail of DFS sports, whether it's like volleyball sometimes or tennis. Yeah, they've got tennis up here right now. And you could parlay some of these with your basketball props. So let's say you're really into tennis and you go there, you go, oh, look, Jack Sinner over under 4.5 aces. You could parlay that with over fantasy points for Jimmy Butler or over real life points. So there's all different ways to play over on Prize Picks. But the number one way you should be playing to get started, use the promo code Awesomo and you get up to a $100 bonus on your first deposit. Really good way to get that bankroll started. That is with the promo code Awesomo. All right, next game that we have on the slate, the Minnesota Timberwolves at home against the San Antonio Spurs. Now, speaking about a team that shot allocation has been a little bit wonky for, how frustrated does it have to be to be Karl-Anthony Towns, who you look at the game yesterday, he's uber efficient. He's shooting like 75% from the field. Patrick Beverley has more shot attempts than him. Anthony Edwards has more shot attempts than him. D'Angelo Russell has more shot attempts than him. I really like the fantasy upside of Karl-Anthony Towns, but it's been a little bit difficult to get to him sometimes this year just because of some of those usage concerns. You look at last night, he's playing really well, but he only has a 23% usage rate. You go back to the game against the Clippers earlier in the week, 15.7% usage rate. Overall, so looking at the ceiling, we've only seen Cat eclipse 60 fantasy points once this entire season. A lot of it has to do with the way the usage is allocated. So what do you make of the ceiling of Karl-Anthony Towns now?
the ceiling is still really high in the sense that there's going to be some games where he does just take over, but his likelihood of reaching that ceiling is just a lot lower, I think, than other similarly priced guys. Because like you think about just other players, you know, kind of towards the top end here, nobody's taking the ball from Steph Curry, really. You know, like Jordan Poole's a relatively high usage guy, but Curry's clearly taking more shots than him any given game. Paul George is the number one guy there. There's nobody that shoots on Denver anymore to compete with Jokic. And then you have Karl Anthony Towns, who in the games D'Angelo Russell has played this year, has the third highest usage rate behind Edwards and Russell. So it's not like this is a sometimes thing where you can expect Towns to lead the team in usage, but sometimes Edwards or Russell are going to get hot. You kind of have to expect Towns to be the third option offensively. So of course he makes up for some of that because he rebounds well, you know, he gets assists, he does everything while he's out there. But I think the ceiling's still really high. It's just that his chances of getting there are a bit lower than other guys priced around him because he's playing with guys that are going to dominate touches more.
Yeah, and that's something where I think we look at Towns. You know, actually, I think relative to pricing, my favorite pay-up option today is Nikola Jokic. On DK, on FanDuel, my favorite pay-up option is Paul George. I think Karl Anthony Towns might be my second favorite pay-up option just because of what his price is. And like we said, I think the odds of him reaching that ceiling are a little capped just because of the usage of these other guys. But, you know, all it takes is Russell getting into foul trouble or them actually passing ball Karl Anthony Towns for him to realize that ceiling. But I think that he's one of the players, at least relative to his price points, that has the most significant ceiling. So do you see yourself getting to Karl Anthony Towns much today?
I doubt that I get to too much just because I would rather find $1,500 for Nikola Jokic or, you know, go to like Bam, or if Bam is out, then obviously Deadman's taking a center spot in a lot of lineups. It's not really a knock on Towns for me. It's more so just that I think it's going to be difficult for me to get to a lot of him at center.
Yeah, I could see that as well. Ultimately, like we talked about before, I do think a lot of my lineups are going to be in the mid range. I know somebody was joking in the YouTube chat before that I'm not paying up for anybody today. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be paying up for very many guys today. I'm just kind of looking at the option we do have to pay up for and seeing which ones I kind of like. But this looks like it's going to be a good slate, at least as of now, to build lineups in the mid range. But one potential value play on this slate, Patrick Beverley is picking up a ton of ownership. Our most recent run, he is one of the most popular plays in both FanDuel and DraftKings. 35.7% projected ownership on FanDuel. On DK, Patrick Beverley is projected for 36.6% ownership. I get that he's starting, but this feels like a little bit too much exposure to Patrick Beverley from the field. How do you feel about him?
I think it's kind of a tough spot because I really like Beverley at this salary. He's playing big minutes. We saw about 34 minutes again yesterday, so that's two games in a row. In the two previous games, he'd only played 27 or 28 minutes, but those were both games where he didn't play at all in the fourth quarter because of garbage time. So we're seeing him pretty, you know, locked into a starter's role, like a true starter's role, where he's starting, he's closing, he's playing low to mid-30s in competitive games. He's averaging about 0.75 DraftKings points per minute in the games he has started alongside D'Angelo Russell. So that's not great production, but it's certainly serviceable if you're going to play that many minutes at this price tag. So I think he's a very good value option. Where I start to have a little bit of a concern is if one third of the field's going to roster him, what's the point in going there? You know, I think that he's still in lineups where you have a couple of contrarian pieces, he still projects as a good value. So by all means, but it's just the point where, you know, he's probably not going to do anything too crazy. You know, at 4,200, if he goes and gets 26, 27 fantasy points, that's good. You're happy with it, but you're going to be able to make that up elsewhere. And the upside to the games where he, you know, gets in foul trouble or for one reason or another scores 20 fantasy points, you're just going to make a lot of money on those days if you don't have that much Beverley. So I am pretty sensitive to the ownership on him. I think he's a very good point per dollar value, but I do think that, you know, the ceiling is kind of muted when you're talking about sharing the ball with D'Angelo Russell, Anthony Edwards, and Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, so I mean, you look at recent starts last night, clearly great. He scores 38.5 fantasy points as a starter. His other starts before then, though, 20.75, 11, 27, 25, 25, 14. A lot of those aren't bad games. They're not going to win you a GPP, but here's also kind of a follow-up to the Patrick Beverley thing. There's a lot of players that we've mentioned that are listed as questionable today. Ultimately, that ownership on Patrick Beverley is likely going to come down as guys get ruled out, and there's going to be better value plays for us to get to. So we're doing the show now. We're talking about in the context of the information we have. This information is going to be totally different by the time that we do shows later in the day.
Yeah, and if Beverly's ownership drops, I will like him more because I think he is a good value. I don't view him as someone where it's just like, right now we don't have value, so Beverly's getting a lot of ownership. I think he is legitimately a good value play at 4,200. So if that, you know, ownership goes from 36%, you know, more guys open up, Beverly gets down to 10, 12%, then I'm going to be happy to get to Beverly.
Yeah, and once again, more information later, guys. Like this video, subscribe to the YouTube channel. We've got the deeper dive later. We got Live Before Lock. I'm actually doing Live Before Lock with Lofi tonight. I don't think I've done a show Lofi in like 6 months. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to that. So that'll be cool. So check that out later. On the other side of the game with the San Antonio Spurs, DeJounte Murray's been terrific lately. Once again, and I know people are going to laugh when I say this again, I don't want to pay for DeJounte Murray either. He's ridiculously expensive, in my opinion, on FanDuel and DraftKings. And does his recent production warrant it? I guess he scored over 60 fantasy points in back-to-back games. I'm just not paying around $10,000 for DeJounte Murray on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, I love DeJounte Murray, but it's still, it's just not difficult to find guards in like the, or players in general, in the like 6 to 7, you know, to 8K range that are capable of getting you 45 or 50 fantasy points. So, you know, yeah, Murray's ceiling probably still a little bit higher, but he's really expensive. I don't mean it in the sense that like he is too expensive. I think if he were cheaper, he would just become massively popular. He's averaging over 1.3 DraftKings points per minute this year. He's playing 35 to 36 minutes in competitive games. He's in a good matchup against Minnesota. All of that looks really good, and I'll be happy to get whatever amount of DeJounte Murray I get to. I think he's very good. I'm okay with the salary. It's more so just that from the upside of, you know, upside standpoint for an entire lineup, I think I'm probably just going to prefer some builds where I go a little bit cheaper. And then also, you know, we haven't talked about him, but I just think Nikola Jokic is on a completely different planet than anyone else. So I'm going to be wanting to get to him. And I think it's going to really be difficult to build lineups that I like where I'm going like Jokic plus Murray, unless, you know, more value opens up.
Yeah, and then as for the rest of the guys on the Spurs, to me, it's about appropriate pricing. Drew Eubanks on DK, at least. He's 5,500 on FanDuel, but sub 5K on DK. I think that's a viable price point. But once again, I assume there's going to be better value that opens up than Drew Eubanks, whose minutes have been a bit capped lately.
Yeah, I do think... Do you think Eubanks plays more minutes with Towns here? I always have a little bit of trouble because, like, Towns is big, but also Towns is just going to shoot threes. So, like, they could, I guess, just use Thaddeus Young. But I don't know. I guess it's a spot where I'm not going to rule out Eubanks playing a couple more minutes. But as usual, I guess it's just kind of set a rule for Thaddeus Young, set a rule for Eubanks. I think they're both at price points that offer a ceiling.
Yeah, and I was looking through Eubanks' game log just to check your theory. Be like, all right, what happened the last time he played against a good big? And then it just hasn't happened. Like he's generally played against teams that don't have somebody to have to necessarily be on the court against. I mean, the Lakers, sure, they went up against Anthony Davis, but Anthony Davis doesn't really play a whole ton of center minutes this year. He played 22 minutes in that game. Every start this year, he's been between like 21 to 24 minutes. So I think that's probably the most likely outcome. Your point about him going up against Towns and potentially needing to play more minutes, that is taken, but we haven't really seen that happen yet. So we'll see. But either way, there's going to be a bunch of value that opens up today, and then I presume that I'm not going to be interested in anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think also... you know, sort of rotating through the cheap wings, Vassell at 4,500, Walker at 3,600, McDermott at 3,800. Pretty difficult to pinpoint which one of them does well, but they all have a path to playing, you know, 28 to 30 minutes if they are playing well.
All right. Now we get to talk about the pay up option. You and I actually both like on this slate. If I had to pay up for one guy, it would be Nikola Jokic. Michael Porter Jr., he remains out. Will Barton, he is not expected to play, injury to Jamal Murray as well. There's just nobody to take shots from Jokic. He's the one that I feel paying up for makes the most sense to gamble FanDuel and DraftKings. I'm not going to force it, but wherever I have the salary to, if a bunch of value does happen to open up, then Jokic will be the guy to get to here. Paying up for Jokic, especially against a Philadelphia 76ers team that's a little beat up right now, easy way to go in my opinion.
Yeah, he's just fantastic. He's like a 1.8 plus DraftKings points per minute guy since last year without Porter or Murray on the floor. This year, it's been even better. He's just unbelievably good. The matchup doesn't concern me. Overall this year, 1.76 DraftKings points per minute. And that's, you know, not just filtering out Porter and Barton. He's played 103 minutes now without either of them on the floor, 1.91 DraftKings points per minute, 38.6% usage rate, 40% assist percentage, 25% rebounding percentage. He's just a totally different player than anybody else.
And then from a value standpoint, I like getting to Bones Highland. He is expected to play today, and he's been pretty good from a fantasy perspective this year. He is scoring over a fantasy point per minute. He's cheap on FanDuel and DraftKings. He got hurt last game against Dallas, was dealing with an ankle injury the last time he was in there. But games before them, scores 30 fantasy points against the Hawks, 32 against the Trailblazers, both in limited minutes. No Will Barton today. Do you think that Bones Highland is a good value play? Because he's actually my favorite guy who's sub 4K to get to on DK right now.
I think he's a good value play. I do want to pay attention to the ownership there, though, just because I think Denver can go so many different ways with his playing time or with the bench playing time in general. But he is the best per minute fantasy producer that they have off the bench. So at 3,400, I do think he's a good value. My only hesitancy is people have been really excited to jump on Bones Highland, you know, bandwagon here. And so he's not someone where, you know, like he's getting tons of ownership that I'd want to get to. But right now he's projected for 14%. That seems completely reasonable to me.
Yeah, so Bones Highland is sensible. And then I look at some of these other guys too. Aaron Gordon, Monty Morris, Jeff Green. I think these are all good points per dollar plays, especially when you look over on the Philly side of the game. And, you know, I think there's a massive dip in the defense, which is an understatement. But when you have Andre Drummond starting at center instead of Joel Embiid, that just creates for a fairly crappy Philadelphia 76ers defense on the whole. So I think really the Denver Nuggets, this is my favorite team to target today.
Yeah, and I really like Monte Morris here. He benefits from Barton being out and Porter being out. He's played 73 minutes so far this year alongside Jokic without Porter or Barton. He's been a fantasy point per minute guy, 21.9% usage rate, 21.2% assist percentage. He's still reasonably priced. He played 37 and a half minutes against Dallas. We had typically been seeing him play 30 to 32, but knowing that he, you know, can play more, that that's at least in the range of outcomes, makes him look even better, I think. So he's someone that I think tends to go overlooked because normally there's like just someone else that steps up as a high usage guy for Denver, but all those guys are out now with Barton out and with Porter out, Murray obviously being out. Aaron Gordon's not a high usage guy. Austin Rivers certainly isn't doing it. Jeff Green isn't doing it. So Jokic is, you know, clearly taking most of the possessions, but Monte Morris gets a bump here as well.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of guys to get to. And the initial build that I did, I'm getting to a lot of Bones Highland, a lot of Jeff Green, Aaron Gordon, Monty Morris, and then Jokic, once again, being my favorite pay-up option. Team that I'm going to be targeting for sure. But on the other side of the game, there isn't that many guys I really like, which does make me concerned in this sense. If I'm going to have lineups to potentially have three Denver players, be really heavy on them. A little bit of concern for me that I don't really like anybody from the Philadelphia 76ers. I think on FanDuel, Tobias Harris makes sense. So he's going to be super popular right now. If Tobias Harris projected for 37.6% ownership on FanDuel. The 8,800 price tag to me, just reasonable. I don't really want to get there. Andre Drummond, the minutes have been really inconsistent lately. Is that something you think could change given the matchup against Jokic?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it could change because you at least know that there's going to be a center out there for 35 minutes for Denver. I don't think Drummond is going to do anything to slow down Nikola Jokic. I don't think they have anyone that is. So yeah, like I think it's likely Drummond plays more minutes. It's just like, I'm not looking at this like, oh, they need Drummond to slow down Jokic because he's not going to do it either.
No, he's certainly not going to slow down Jokic. And you know, at that point, you might as well just get somebody who's better on the court, which could even be George Niang, and just say like, hey, we're going to play smaller lineups, let Jokic do his thing. We're just going to try to shoot to stay in the game. But Philly, we've got Tobias Harris on FanDuel, 7,500. What do you make of the ownership going to Harris, 37.6% on FanDuel at 7,500?
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that's a really, really cheap price tag for someone that's likely to play, you know, mid-30s if this game's competitive, which, you know, is a big if. But if this game's competitive, he's likely to play mid-30s in minutes. He gets a huge usage bump without Joel Embiid out there and obviously without Simmons. So I think that, like, I think he's fine on DraftKings. I think he's drastically underpriced on FanDuel.
Yeah, and also look at the FanDuel price, $1,300 cheaper than he is on DK. So no issue getting to him there. Also, for this game to stay competitive, I presume that Tobias Harris has to play fairly well. Maybe also Maxey, because Maxey's shown a lot of ceiling this year, but it's hard to imagine a scenario where Tobias Harris shits the bed, and the Sixers are competitive with the Denver Nuggets with Joel Embiid out. So that's something else to consider.
29.2% usage rate for Harris without Embiid on the floor so far this year. He's played 73 minutes with Maxey and Drummond on. 29.8% usage rate, 22% assist percentage. Only a 7.8% rebounding percentage. That probably comes up a bit, but you know, also Drummond is just grabbing everything.
All right, final game to talk about on the slate, the Utah Jazz at home against the Toronto Raptors. And starting with Rudy Gobert, talking about some of those guys that are priced kind of in that upper mid-tier price range. Rudy Gobert, 8K on DK, 8,500 on FanDuel. I really like getting to him at this salary, especially on FanDuel, where you get the added bonus of the blocks because of all the defensive numbers and the 3 points for defensive stats instead of two. Rudy Gobert, do you think he's somebody that you're going to like getting to today?
Yeah, 8K for Gobert looks pretty good to me. He's been a very, very good fantasy producer this season. I don't really know why his salary has dropped at all. He started out being pretty expensive, but living up to that salary, and then now you're seeing it come down. He's averaging 1.31 DraftKings points per minute this season. That's about the same production that you get from DeJounte Murray. Murray plays a few more minutes per game, but you know, point being that on a, you know, a per minute basis, he's producing at a very, very high level. He's only 8K. I think Gobert looks great again.
All right. Anything else from Utah really stand out to you? Donovan Mitchell, I think there's always upside in him, but he's kind of price appropriate at this point. And then other guys, Mike Conley, Bojan Bogdanovic, Jordan Clarkson, Joe Ingles. To me, these guys just generally carry too high of a price tag when Donovan Mitchell's in. I love getting to these guys when Mitchell's out. I've rarely rostered them when Mitchell plays. Do you have any alternative take to that?
No, not really. It's just a healthy team. Donovan Mitchell is fine. I think that he is someone that people have kind of slept on a little bit this year. He's another 1.3 fantasy point per minute guy at a reasonable price tag. I'm never opposed to playing Jordan Clarkson in tournaments because if he gets hot off the bench, there's plenty of ways for him to close. And he's only 5,200. He's got close to a 30% usage rate, but nothing that I would call a priority here. More so just relatively low owned guys that have high ceilings.
All right.
I would call him a priority.
Yeah. Gobert's going to be a priority for me today. He's one of the better upper mid-tier price dollar guys that I have projected today. So Gobert will certainly be getting to. On the other side of the game, I don't really know what to make of Toronto right now. OG Anunoby is questionable. Chris Boucher is questionable. I rarely like to roster guys on the road in Utah, but maybe there's a little bit of inevitability here if those guys aren't able to play just because of the kind of overall playing time and usage it would open up. I think the guy I would have the most interest in is Pascal Siakam, just from a standpoint of he's currently $8,100 on FanDuel. Siakam's price point on DraftKings is $7,900. And if there's going to be no OG Anunoby, no Chris Boucher, I think that just means that Siakam's going to have to play the biggest minutes he's played all year. And also, he's a little bit cheaper this year than he was last year. There's no Kyle Lowry in the mix for the Toronto Raptors, so I think we're going to see Siakam probably settle as a guy in the mid to high 8K range. So is Siakam somebody that you would be looking to get to if there's no Anunoby today?
Yeah, I think even if there is Anunoby, he's interesting. Like, he played 39 minutes last game. He's 7,900. We know he's a good fantasy producer. You should expect him at the very least to produce at the same rates that he did last year, if not better. So far, he's played 128 minutes this year, 1.1 DraftKings points per minute. So it's a tough matchup against Utah, you know, no doubt about it. But I still think that he's pretty favorably priced. And if Anunoby's out, that looks even better because Anunoby's seen a large increase in usage this year. I do expect that to come down to earth now that Siakam is back. But either way, we have just seen Anunoby in general be more aggressive offensively. If you take him out and you're replacing him with someone like Svi Mykhailiuk or whoever, that you're just going to have more usage available for guys like Siakam and VanVleet.
Yeah. And then if everybody's in, I don't really know how much I would like the Toronto Raptors just because tough matchup in Utah. The pricing in general is about fair. Siakam would still be the guy that I have the most interest in from a tournament perspective. But if everybody's in, is there anybody that you would really like from like the Fred VanVleet or OG Anunoby, Scotty Barnes trio?
No, it's more so just kind of like we were saying with Utah. These guys still have, you know, a path to success. They play big minutes in competitive games, and the highest owned guy on DraftKings right now, Siakam at 10%. So I think their role in lineup construction is basically, you know, I have popular guys. I have, you know, a bunch of popular guys. I need a guy that has a ceiling but isn't getting a lot of ownership. Mix in some VanVleet, some Barnes, some Siakam. But none of them would stand out as priorities. And one thing I forgot to mention on the Utah side, I mentioned, you know, being interested in Jordan Clarkson in tournaments. I do want to pay attention, and it's not a whole, I can't do a whole lot with it today, but I do want to keep an eye on what his usage rate does with Rudy Gay back. Gay is probable tonight. If they're running Rudy Gay with the second unit, like in place of Eric Paschal, there's a chance he cuts into Jordan Clarkson's usage.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a fine way to look at that as well. I wasn't really thinking about that too much. That is going to do it for us, guys. Still a lot of content coming up on the YouTube channel. Also a lot of free content over at awesomeo.com today. The ownership rankings, those are free. Of course, Adam's deep dive article, that is always free. That is a really comprehensive way to look at the slate. And there's going to be a lot of injuries. And when we get updates later in the day, that'll be stuff that Adam will be able to write about more in detail. So if you want more of Adam's thoughts, be sure to check that out for free. Other than that, guys, subscribe to the channel, like the video, and good luck today.